Views and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and contributors, and not necessarily those of WFSU Public Media.
What's the 411? 411 Teen is a weekly program for teens, families, and other interested folks. 411 Teen provides a forum to examine and analyze and discuss various issues and events that confront, intersect, and often interrupt our daily lives. Even before COVID-19, the state of children's mental health had worsened over the past decade. According to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, between 2009 and 2019, an increasing percentage of American youth reported feeling sad or hopeless for at least 2 weeks, to the degree that they could not even engage in their regular activities. A 2018 Review Center poll reported anxiety and depression are major problems. The percentage of students who seriously considered suicide has risen in the past decade. Depending upon your reference, suicide is the second or third leading cause of death among adolescents. Some of these problems have been exacerbated by the pandemic. In 2021, suicide was the third leading cause of death amongst the ages of 15 to 24. And due to increased pressures, suicide rates continue to rise. Emma Benoit attempted suicide and lived to talk about it. She's paralyzed and learning to walk again, but she shares what it's like to try to take your life, and then the minute you do, immediately regret your decision. I'm Dr. Liz Holyfield, and Emma, I want to welcome you to 411 Teen.
Thank you so much for having me.
And thank you so much for coming to share your information, your experience. You're one of the lucky ones. You're going to share your painful experience and shine a light on the fact that over 20 young people die every day to suicide in the United States. Again, I welcome you, and we're so glad to have you share your message with us. You've created a documentary. First, tell us about it.
Yes, I have a documentary film that encompasses my suicide attempt survival journey. And the way that kind of came about was after I came home from the hospital from the suicide attempt, I really realized just how many other young people were suffering in silence like I was. And so I wanted to find an outlet to share my story and express this experience and just try to find other people who have similar stories and similar experiences to find someone to relate to. And so in doing so, a filmmaker came across my blogs and wanted to share my story in a different way. And I decided to team up with him and create a documentary film that fully encompasses my story and the stories of others in my state who struggled with suicidal thoughts.
Well, I applaud you. I saw your documentary. It's very well done. Again, I applaud you on your documentary and just your ability to open up and talk about what you were experiencing. You attempted suicide, and suicide, for our listening audience, is an intentional self-harm that results in death. Will you share what happened, what was happening with you at the time or that period of your life, what you were going through that encouraged you, got you to the point of attempting suicide?
I had been struggling with my mental health for years. My anxiety started in elementary school. But the thing is, I had no clue what I was dealing with. I didn't know that what I was experiencing was depression or anxiety. Mm-hmm. Mental health was not something that was discussed or talked about, or really even in the forefront in my life growing up. So for me, experiencing these mental health challenges, only not knowing what they were or what to do with them, left me in a really challenging position. That ultimately, as I got older, the anxiety developed and progressed, as well as the depression. It developed and progressed as I got older. And having all those years of struggling with my mental health only never talking about it with anyone or expressing my feelings and thoughts with anyone, it left me in a position where I was completely alone. I felt completely alone. And the summer before my senior year of high school is when I really started to spiral down. I completely lost the passion for my sport. My whole life, I had been a cheerleader and I'd been extremely passionate about that sport. But going into my senior year of high school, that passion was gone and I had lost that love and decided not to try out for the team. And that same summer, I was on a trip in New York City as a modeling representative for a local photographer. And on that trip during the summer, I felt like all of my joy had came back to me. And for the first time in a long time, I wasn't weighed down by any of the pressures or the lies, quite frankly, that I had been maintaining. And so I really was shown the cloud of depression that I was living under whenever I came home and had be, and I was dropped back down into my reality. So that experience coming from an extreme high of life back down to a low, back into my depressive state, really left me in a position of extreme hopelessness. And on the day I attempted suicide, there are two feelings that stand out, and they are extreme exhaustion and extreme hopelessness. I was extremely exhausted of fighting to live. I was extremely exhausted of holding all of these feelings in and never feeling like I would be heard or seen had I expressed them. I carried a lot of the stigma with me as well. That was one of the biggest hindrances as to why I never reached out. And on the day I attempted suicide, I was just at an all-time low and extremely hopeless. And I decided to make the decision to attempt to take my own life.
For the listening audience, you all need to understand that Emma presented on the outside as a model teenager. She was a cheerleader. She had lots of friends. She had a loving, supporting family, you know, and a model. But on the inside, and Emma, tell me if I'm characterizing this inaccurately, on the inside, you were literally falling apart, experiencing anxiety and depression. But nobody picked it up. Is that right?
That is absolutely correct. You hit the nail on the head with that. My the exterior image of my life was picture perfect, all American girl. But internally, you are right. I was breaking. I was struggling. I did not know how to handle myself. I did not know how to cope with things. I was a mess internally, but externally, it looked completely different. And I think something that's notable to note is my exterior was so vastly different from how I was feeling inside that it could have been a warning sign. I was overachieving, high performing, always the best of the best. And that type of lifestyle came with a lot of pressure. And I internalized all of that pressure and all of those stressors. And I never expressed or had a cracking point or a moment of weakness or a moment of vulnerability. And so something that's unique about my story, in my opinion, is my ability to be able to reflect on the way I was and the way I presented myself and the way that I was feeling internally and just the disconnect. But I think it's interesting to note that because I know that there are other young teenage girls specifically who are just like me, who are in my shoes, who present perfectly normal, fine, unbreakable, untouchable, but internally, it's a different story.
And I'm so glad that you took time to elaborate on that. And I gather your goal through sharing this story, because it has to be painful to some degree to go through it over and over and over again, because you say immediately when after you pulled the trigger, you knew you did not want to die. You just needed relief. What I hear is you just needed relief from the pain and the distress of anxiety and depression. You were exhausted, you know, and you just felt like things were hopeless.
Yeah, absolutely. And that instant regret is honestly what propelled me on this mission, if I'm being completely honest. That feeling of instant regret and knowing that I made a mistake and I made the wrong decision. That's not really what my goal was. I knew that there had to be other people just like me out there. And so I used my story to try to bring light to that topic exactly of people who are suicidal, people who attempt suicide. They don't necessarily want to die. They just want their pain to end.
Exactly. And, you know, that pain is so overwhelming that all they want to do is get rid of the pain, you know. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what's happening. That's what's going on. What would you say to teenagers who are going through similar experiences, similar feelings, who are toying with suicide? I mean, you know, they might have fleeting thoughts about it. Anything you would share or say to them?
Yeah, certainly. So there's so many things that I would say to a person who's actively struggling. But the number one thing is to know that it is absolutely okay to be feeling what you are feeling. That's something that I felt, I didn't know that was true. I thought that I was in the wrong for feeling this way. I thought that shame on me for feeling such a way about my life because look how perfect my life is. But that is absolutely a lie, and you don't need to believe that lie. If you're struggling with your mental health, if you're having thoughts of suicide, I encourage you to reach out and find someone to talk to. It sounds so silly and so minor, but talking really does help. It does, it gives you an opportunity to be able to release what it is that's on your heart and in your head and put it out there. And that way you're not alone with it. I encourage if you're struggling, like I said, with your mental health or you're suicidal, please find someone to reach out to and talk to about those thoughts and feelings. It does get better. There is absolutely a light at the tunnel. At the end of the tunnel, I am living proof of that. And hope is real. There are so many options for recovery out there that it is so necessary to reach out and seek help when you're actively suicidal or having a mental health crisis.
Well, we are going to talk about some of those options that are available and what how people can get over that hurdle of talking to someone. Because as you well know, it's easy to say you just need to talk to someone, but it's sometimes very difficult to take that first step to talk with folks. So that's what we need to emphasize, I think. That's one of the points we need to emphasize. You're tuned in to 411 Teen. I'm Dr. Liz Holyfield, and I'm talking with Emma Benoit. She's talking about her suicide attempt and sharing powerful information. We're going to take a brief break, but we'll get right back at you. Just tuning in, the program is 411 Teen, a program for families and teens and other interested folks. This hour, I'm talking with Emma Benoit. She is sharing her powerful story of her suicide attempt that happened on June 7th, 2017. Emma, again, welcome to 411 Teen.
Pleasure to be here.
Yeah. If folks are having suicidal thoughts, yet they haven't acted on them, but they're feeling like suicide is the way out, you mentioned that there are a number of things that they can do, a number of options that they can pursue. Before we get to those options, I wanted to address the parents in all of this, because your family also was totally unaware of what was happening. True?
Yes, they were completely unaware of how badly I was struggling.
Yeah. And often when that happens, the family's just devastated. You know, parents blame themselves, thinking, what can I do? Do you have any suggestions to parents who have teens who may be going through some changes and the parents aren't quite sure what position to take? They aren't sure whether they should even say anything. What types of things, what kind of suggestions, what types of insights would you share with parents?
I would say, first of all, I'm not a parent, so I can only imagine how challenging it must be to be a parent of a teenager. But something that I would encourage is authentic conversations. That's something that was lacking in my home. Empathetic and authentic conversations. That, like I said, was something that wasn't present in my home. And mm-hmm. so anytime I would be talking to my mom or dad, I would always be filtering what I was going to say to please them, to make them happy, mm-hmm. to say what they want to hear. So I think knowing that as a parent, that your kid may be in a position of saying things that you want to hear to make you happy or to please you. I think knowing that as a parent could kind of give you a little more guidance in terms of communicating with your youth, and just encourage true vulnerability and authenticity, and let them know, reiterate to them, no matter what you say, no matter how you feel, it's not going to change the way how much I love you, not going to change the way, you know, I feel about you. Because oftentimes I felt like when I would be expressing some of my deeper, darker feelings and thoughts on the occasions that I did with my parents, I almost felt guilty for putting that burden on them. So I think it's important that as a parent, you let your kids know that they're not a burden. No matter what they bring to you, it will not burden them. And that, you know, you're willing and wanting to help them through whatever it is that they're going through. And I think also something to note for parents is that, you know, I can imagine it must be hard to put yourself back in the shoes of a teenager, but it's necessary sometimes to put yourself back into that position and remember how things felt for you when you were their age. Because the things that are a big deal to a teenager are seemingly nothing to an adult. Mm-hmm. But you have to remember where they're coming from and their level of life experience whenever you're helping them through a problem or getting them over a big emotion. So I think those are two just things to note if parents are, you know, struggling with their youth or even not, you know, just to note as a parent of a teenager, because I feel like sometimes those things kind of get forgotten along the way.
And I might add for the parents that life is really hard for young folks today. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and parents are always saying, oh, I remember when, but we can't remember anything like this. Mm-hmm. You have it coming from all different directions. And so there is a lot of stress and a lot of pressure out there, no matter which way you turn. So, and sometimes, you know, parents, you know, forget that. They think, you know, school right now, high school, college is the best years of your life. Enjoy it. It should be. And it may have been the best years in our lives. But today, there's so much stress involved in it that it's hard to deal. And people are finding it increasingly more and more difficult to cope. Well, you mentioned and you talked about your documentary. I neglected to get from you the necessary information where our listening audience may access it, you know, where they can get connect to the documentary or the trailer so they can see how well it was done and they can gain some knowledge from it, because anybody and everybody can walk away with information.
Yeah, so the website is called, or the documentary is called My Ascension. And the website that's attached to the documentary is called myascension.us. And on that website, you can find all the information pertaining to the film and how to access it, as well as our YouTube channel. If you just search in the YouTube search bar, My Ascension, mm-hmm. we have several videos, the trailers up on YouTube, as well as other videos that I've done before in the past. So that's the easiest way to access what we're doing here on my end, is just visiting myascension.us.
Okay. You know, people do not know that about 20 young people die every day by suicide in the United States. What advice would you give, or would you say to just us folks in the community, us around, how can we help, how can we support young folks who are going through anxiety, who are experiencing depression? Is there anything that you think the community can do? Because it's all around. It's the community, excuse me, it's the community, it's the school, it's the parents. I mean, it's your whole environment. So we need to touch on little every aspect and any insights that you would share.
Yes, certainly. So the best, well, let me rephrase that. With the documentary film, we've seen a great increase in community involvement in mm-hmm. mental health as a whole. And so what's been a really amazing opportunity for myself and the filmmaker, Greg, to be able to share this documentary film with communities. Mm-hmm. So that's the real big goal of the documentary film, is to host community events. And it can look a number of ways. And we've done several different types of community events in the past with the documentary film. But what's really unique about hosting an event with the film is not only are you getting 90 minutes of a great message with inspiration and good information to take away with you, you're also going to get, if the event is set up the way that we've done in the past, there will be mental health resources from your community at the event. So that's something that we like to do, is when someone decides that they want to share the film, we like to mm-hmm. create an entire event around the film. That way it's more of just going see a movie and more less of just going see a movie and more of going to an impactful, life-changing event. So that's one of the ways that I've seen has been really impactful and productive, if you will, in the sphere of getting community members and school boards and businesses all on board with this bigger change that we're trying to incite.
Well, we've talked about just the pressures of today. I've talked about pressures that are coming from all different directions. But I'd like to hear you talk about the pressures that teens experience, because it may be something that I have not included. But when I say the pressures of today, I'm thinking of, like, what impact has social media had on one's anxiety and depression?
I would say a great impact. I know for me personally, social media had definitely impacted and affected my mental health as a mm-hmm. teenager. Mm-hmm. I think one of the biggest problems with social media is the overconsumption. Mm-hmm. I think kids nowadays are exposed to far more information than we really need to be exposed to. Mm-hmm. And I also think that social media is an illusion. It is not really reality. And being a youth, being a teenager, it's easy to get wrapped up in that. It's easy to lose sight of your actual reality and the reality that you see in front of your face on a screen all day. So I think that's the biggest component in terms of social media, is just the comparison factor and the fact that these kids are going online and seeing unrealistic, you know, not really authentic people, you know, promoting the best of the best. You know, social media, in my opinion, is nothing but a highlight reel. Everyone is just going to post and share what is good about their lives or what makes them happy, or, you know, when they're on their best days. You're very rarely going to see, you know, the very real raw moments of someone's life online. But being a teenager, you lose sight of that. It's not as easy to see reality as it is versus reality online, partly because the youth today, social media and smartphones is all they really uh-huh. know. I know myself, I can remember about 4 years before the smartphone, but after that, I have very little memory without technology, smartphones. So that's something to take into consideration too, when thinking about the youth mental health crisis that we're in, is the fact that not only are they overstimulated, but they're also, this is all they know. They're not used to anything without it.
Okay. What about that friend that suspects their friend may be going through some distress? They think they're experiencing some suicidal thoughts, but the friend's not talking to them. What should they do?
I would say, obviously, every situation is different and there's mm-hmm. context involved. But I would say, if you know that a friend is struggling or you think a friend is struggling, I would encourage you to open up the conversation. Mm-hmm. Because sometimes, I know myself personally, it is really challenging to admit the things you're feeling and thinking. But having someone else ask you the question, mm-hmm. are you thinking of suicide? Are you thinking of harming yourself? That opens up the door and alleviates a lot of the stress and pressure that is associated with admitting that you have suicidal thoughts. So I would encourage, like I said, if you are suspecting something in a loved one in your life, open up the conversation and put the word on the table. That's a word that is scary and we tend to run from as humans, but I think it's necessary that we use the word suicide and we mm-hmm. acknowledge that that's sometimes what people think.
And that's healthy. That mm-hmm. is, it's healthy calling it like it is and being real, because anxiety and stress, depression are experienced by us all, adults, mm-hmm. teens, even kids. You know, stress is what that particular feeling created when we react to a particular event. What types of things, and I know everyone is individual, but when you kind of look at the teens' world today, in addition to social media, what creates stress in a teen's life today?
Oh man, that's a tricky question. I would say a number of things, mm-hmm. but the ones that I'm able to pin down are expectations.
Okay.
Fear of failure.
Mm-hmm.
And community, feeling like you fit in, having a place where you belong, mm-hmm. feel a sense of belonging. That's what we'll call it.
Mm-hmm.
Those three are, I know in my own personal journey, those are the three things that brought me the most crippling stress and anxiety.
Okay. So that's important to know. And I think that maybe folks are not aware of these unrealistic expectations. And I've heard that often about mm-hmm. the expectations a lot. You're expected to know what you're going to do when you get out of high school and where you're going. And I mean, nobody yeah. really knows that. People go off to college and change their majors 3 or 4 times,
right.
you know. But today you're expected to know that. And you're expected yeah. to, you know, have the right purse in some circles and drive the right car. And mm-hmm. and it's overwhelming.
Mm.
It seems to be overwhelming.
It is, especially for a young person mm-hmm. who doesn't have the life experience or the brain capacity to be able to navigate all of those things.
Mm-hmm. As we talk about the areas that you are confronted with, what about school? Young people spend more time in school than usually any place else, except for online, okay? Mm-hmm. I know they spend mm-hmm. more time. But, you know, they spend a lot of time at school. And are there things that the teachers or the administrators are overlooking? Are there clues that you can share with them? Are there any warning signs that you would share that they can be looking for in this individual, in this adolescent, this young person that may be going through some real changes?
Yes. So there are certainly some of the bigger warning signs that mm-hmm. they tell you to look out for. And they are genuinely warning signs that are worthwhile to look out for. I would say overall character changes. Mm-hmm. That's something that I know within myself happened. I completely shifted on character-wise. So I would say if you notice that a student is maybe not interacting with their group of friends as much, or maybe not participating in class as much, or showing up to school late more often, or any of those kind of reasons of concern, I would say to keep an extra eye out for that student and to open up conversation with that student more on a one-on-one basis. Because I feel like for students in school, like you said, they are at that school majority of their life. Mm-hmm. So it's really easy for a student to get wrapped up in thinking that their identity is just student. And they're nothing more, nothing less than just a student who goes to school. And that's not true. And I think teachers have a unique opportunity to be able to help the kids develop identities outside of the classroom. And there are ways that you can do that. But one of the ways to do that is to actively acknowledge your student outside of the classroom. And I know it can be challenging. I can only imagine the trials and things that teachers have to face, but I think it's imperative that kids feel like they're seen in school and not mm-hmm. just a part of a group of students. that makes sense.
Yeah, because what I hear you saying is if you have a student who seems to be going through some changes, if you're seeing any extremes in behavior, here you have a student who was very conscientious, did really well academically, and all of a sudden they don't seem to care anymore, okay? That's a major change that may be going on. Or they may be very, very, their personality may change. They may be argumentative. They may not be cooperative. And you think, wow, this is not them. What's going on? And again, I can't emphasize enough that the least the person can do is reach out and ask them, hey, are you going through some changes? You know, is there anything you'd like to talk about? And that alone lets them know that they are being, you know, being recognized, that folks see something is happening, that they're going through some changes. I mean, would you agree with that? You think that's a good tactic?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I agree 100%. I think that that is totally accurate in terms of identifying when someone is struggling. I think that it's necessary for an outside person to step in and take authority in someone with someone whenever they notice major changes like that. And some of those major changes that you were listing off, those all kind of aligned in my reality as to what my life looked like shortly before I attempted. So, you know, had the adults in my life been aware of these things, things might have looked a little bit different for me.
And if somebody had possibly reached out, then hey, you may have taken a different path.
Yes.
Okay. Hold your thoughts. You tuned in to 411 Teen. We're going to take a brief break, but we'll get right back at you.
Views and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and contributors, and not necessarily those of WFSU Public Media.
What's the 411? I'm Dr. Liz Hollyfield, and I've been talking with Emma Pinnaugh, who attempted suicide and was paralyzed as a result. She is learning to walk again. She's one of the lucky ones who lived to tell her story. She talks about her documentary, created to share her painful experience with others in hopes of shedding light on anxiety and depression. Emma, when I say mental health, what does that mean to you? What does that mean to young folks?
Well, I think it means a great deal to me now. It didn't mean a lot to me before my attempt. And that's because I did not know that mental health was even a thing. I hadn't heard the words used together up until I attempted suicide myself. So, but I think mental health is health. I think it needs to be viewed and really prioritized in the same manner that we prioritize our gut health, our heart health, you know, all these other components of our body. They're all necessary vital organs, and we prioritize those organs and their health, but we don't give the same respect and priority to the brain, which is a huge, I would think, one of the most necessary organs that a person has. And I think it's just simply that, acknowledging and knowing that mental health is a part of your overall health.
Okay. What do you think is the general attitude? Because we're starting now to hear a lot about mental health in young folks. We need to address mental health. What is the general attitude that you find? Are most young folks, teens, kind of just indifferent to mental health, don't even think anything about it? Or are they really much more conscious of what it means?
I would think the former. I would think that the youth today are far more accepting and understanding of what mental health is. And I think that they acknowledge their own mental health in a different way than we've seen in previous generations. So I think it's hopeful in that regard of, you know, the students and how they feel in terms of mental health. I think there are certainly still some young people who aren't really convinced that it's something that is that big of a deal or is something that we need to be really talking about this much. But I would say the vast majority of the youth today are on board with acknowledging and prioritizing our mental health moving forward. So I would say it's overall hopeful
Okay. You praised the law enforcement intervention that you received in your situation when you attempted suicide. What was so special about it? And can you share suggestions for first responders to suicide attempts?
So my suicide attempt was a bit unique. I didn't call 911 in the moment of crisis. Mm-hmm. That call was made by my mom, and they responded so amazingly. The police office in my community really wrapped my family and me in support and love, and they really got the job done. And if it wouldn't have been for them responding as quickly and as efficiently as they did, I don't think that I would still be here based on how great my injuries were. But I think there's a lot of progress that can be made in terms of law enforcement dealing with mental mm-hmm. health. But I think one of the biggest aspects is just the education factor. I think that it's imperative that law enforcement agencies implement some sort of mental health training for their officers and for their dispatchers, because at any moment in time, someone could pick up the phone and call 911 and be suicidal. And so I think it's important and imperative that they know how to respond, what to say, you know, things like that. That way we are moving on an upswing in terms of mental health as a whole in communities. But I think in my own experience, the law enforcement did a phenomenal job at responding to my situation.
Okay. What was it specifically about how they responded that was so supportive and helpful?
Well, immediately when I was brought to the hospital, my family was met with support on both the financial side, the law enforcement rallied around people to cook meals for my family, to support my family during that time. And they also worked with the community to put together a softball tournament to raise funds for my medical expenses while I was in the hospital. So that way my parents didn't have to worry about going to work and funding the hospital bills and things of that nature. So overall, they just really stepped up to the plate and offered so much support, both financially and just overall support for our family during that time.
Okay, that's great to hear. Because sometimes the attitude is a little different. And I wanted you to address that. The advocacy group, Mental Health America, surveyed teens about three things that would be most helpful for their mental health. And the teens around the country, one thing, I don't know if you're familiar with this, but one of the things that teens around the country are pushing to expand the concept of school sick days to bolster mental health wellness. They said they're faced with a high level of stress. The adolescents are going through many changes, many mental health crises, and that includes suicide. But they recommend a mental health day. And I didn't know if you're familiar with it, but do you think that that would be helpful? Let me tell you a little bit more about this mental health day. And some of the states are permitting it. I mean, Arizona, Colorado, Connecticut, Maine, and I could go on, Utah, Virginia, have all passed bills to permit students to be absent for school for what they're calling mental or behavioral health reasons. Do you think this is a good move? Do you think this is a positive move? How do you feel about that? Do you think it would make a difference? It would be, I guess, sort of a day of rest, a day to kind of recalibrate and take a break from the typical routine. And it could also be from work, not just school, but school or work, when you're just feeling overwhelmed and stressed and like you just can't put another foot in front of the other.
Yeah, I think that that idea, that suggestion is a great one. I think it's phenomenal. I think that implementing those types of days off will enhance and increase people's mental health as a whole. Because I say that because I know myself personally, school is never something that I was excited about. Mm-hmm. It was never something that I enjoyed doing. It brought a great deal of stress onto me. It brought a great deal of anxiety onto me. And so having to be at school every single day from a certain time to a certain time, you begin to lose yourself and you begin to feel, like I said earlier, like you're nothing but a little worker bee who's just going to school every day. And I can imagine as an adult, you probably tend to feel that way too sometimes. Mm-hmm. So I think having a day designated to take to just fully unplug from everything pertaining to your life or your reality, all of the things that you have to do, I think that's really could be very helpful for a lot of people, because there are a lot of people who don't thrive off of productivity. There are people who thrive with productivity and love mm-hmm. a routine. And then there are people who don't, who need that day, who need a time to just have no priorities, just rest and focus on yourself for that day. I think that is a great idea. And I'm really interested to see the shifts in the states that did implement that versus the states that didn't.
Okay. And I can share with you the actual states so far, and they are, just for your information, it's Arizona, Colorado, Connecticut, Illinois, Maine, Nevada, Utah, Oregon, and Virginia. And they have all passed bills permitting students to be absent for school for a mental health or behavioral health day. So, you know, if you want to follow up on that, that might be helpful. Typically, it's a day of rest, as I said. And what some schools are doing, what some schools are doing are incorporating wellness rooms or oasis rooms there within the school. So if you're in school and let's say you really don't need to, you don't want to just leave school, they have designated rooms where kind of like cool out rooms, okay? Mm. Where you can go and chill and there may be a counselor available to talk with you. It's just a kind of quiet, relaxing, supportive environment. So that's another option. I say this to ask, what stigma is associated among teens, or if there is any, when it comes to mental health issues? That was the one question I had. I have not been able to pursue that. When they have these mental health wellness rooms and oasis rooms, because if you're going in that room, that means that obviously, you're going through some changes. You're having some stress. And what's the attitude about, is there a big stigma still around mental health issues?
I would say yes, there is definitely still a stigma that is lingering surrounding mental health for sure. I know that's one of the biggest hindrances, like I mentioned in the beginning of this episode, mm-hmm. as to why I never felt comfortable speaking up or sharing how I was feeling or my thoughts was because of that stigma. I was afraid of being looked at in a different way or having my image tainted in some way. I never wanted anyone to think that I was a weak person mm-hmm. because I was struggling with my mental health. And that stigma does still exist today. It's unfortunate that it still exists, but it does. And that's something that we need to take into consideration. But I would think the students today, like I mentioned, are far more progressive in terms mm-hmm. of mental health and accepting it. But I would think that there are likely still some students who don't really understand or aren't convinced that it is this big of an issue. So I would think it just all depends on the individual. But again, I would say the vast majority of people have kind of done away with the stigma, and they all kind of acknowledge within themselves that no, mental health is health, and it is mm-hmm. the most human thing for us to be doing, to acknowledge other people's mental health when they're struggling. So I think that those wellness rooms are very good ideas, and I think that they could be very helpful. But again, there is still that stigma to navigate.
In your typical school, what options do you have available? Are there any options available? I mean, you're feeling really stressed out. You just, it's hard to make it. What is available there within your the typical, and I know there are always exceptions, but the typical high school, is there anyone that you can go talk to? Because whenever I talk, I know the psychologists are overwhelmed. You might have one psychologist for four or five schools, so they may not even be there. So I asked you, from your experience, what options are available?
So I would say that my experience was more along the lines of a typical high school, whereas mm-hmm. we didn't have a designated mental health counselor on site. We only had guidance counselors on site. So there really were no options for students in my school whenever they were struggling with their mental health. And if there were options, we were never exposed to those options. Mm. So, and that's a problem. That's one of the bigger issues when unfolding my story, was that there was no external support in the school. There was no acknowledgement of the student's mental health, and there was no professional help or care accessible to the students.
Well, how often in these last few minutes do conversations about mental health and feelings of stress and depression and anxiety occur among your peers? I mean, is it something that you all may kind of talk about amongst each other, or do you just totally ignore it, you know, swallow it?
I would say it's a combination of both. Okay. But there's an issue with the combination, and the issue is, There's one hand where you don't talk about it, you keep everything to yourself. And then on the other hand, it's unfortunate to admit, but with teenagers, things become trendy really quickly. So the conversation around mental health at like for instance, the school lunch table is a little bit problematic in the sense that sometimes when kids are really struggling or hurting, they don't know how to express that. And so they turn to dark humor. They turn to making jokes about these things. And while it's good that they are talking about it in a way, it's not good because they obviously still feel residual effects of the stigma. So they feel the need to make light about it or joke about it, or, you know, make a joke about how they're feeling, when in reality, they actually do feel that way. So that's why it's a little bit problematic. But I think, like I said, I'm at least starting to see in the youth a vast change in terms of their approach with mental health.
Okay. What about how effective are hotlines or mental health apps? Are they utilized? Can you address that at all?
Yes, certainly. So I know from my experience, the suicide hotline was something that I was not even aware existed when I was in high school. But now, especially after they had a really famous rapper come out with a song for the hotline, that hotline is vastly more used, greatly more accepted amongst teenagers. So that's a real good improvement that I've seen just in the last 3 years of working in mental health, is the acceptance and the use of that hotline. And what's even more exciting is the fact that that hotline is no longer a 1-800 number. Starting on July 16th, I believe, that hotline is now going to be a three-digit number. It's going to be 988.
Yes.
So that'll make it so much more accessible for the young people, because when you're in a moment of crisis, your brain is not going to allow you to think of those numbers.
That's right.
It's just not. But if you can remember, similar as 911 is ingrained in our heads as we're kids, if we can ingrain that 988 number into the next generations, I think we're going to see those hotlines, those national organizations, be put to use a lot more than they have been in the past years.
Emily, we've almost at the end of the line. Is there anything you'd like to share in the next 15, 20 seconds? any closing words of wisdom? And not Emily, correction, Emma. I said Emily.
Yeah, I would just say I'm just so grateful to have a story that I can share that resonates with so many people across the nation and across the world. I've had so many different kids come up to me after seeing the documentary film or hearing me share my story, letting me know that I've helped them, I've saved their lives, I've given them a second to pause and think about what they were thinking about doing. So that feedback makes this journey all the while worth it. I know you mentioned earlier that it's challenging, and it is, but it's so worth it for me, because if I can help one person, then it's worth it.
Well, thank you. It's time out for this edition of 411 Teen. Emma Benoit, 411 Teen applauds you in sharing your painful experience with us. Much appreciation to my listening audience for your time and your ear. Tune in next week, same time, same place, to get the 411 on 411 Teen.